Welcome to this session. Thank you for joining us at the last session of the day. I'm actually excited to see that many people. We were thinking about like five or so. So welcome. So my name is Kurt Drapers. I'm a group program manager in the SQL Server team. I'm here with my colleague Adam. So today what we're actually going to do is we're going to talk about DAC, data tier applications, our DAC back format. How many of you actually came to our session about SQL Server data tools earlier this week? Great, thank you. Thanks. How many of you used DAC backs? Two. Good. So this is a good session for you. So what we're going to do today, we're actually going to give you an introduction about what data tier applications are about, why we are spending so much time on it. For those of you who used it, you will hopefully see that there is a huge difference between what we did in SQL Server 2012 and actually the previous releases. We'll talk a little bit about the evolution and how we got here, actually. And then we're going to talk about the framework that sits underneath. As you might know, is like we have, besides a package format, we have an engine. And we have different hosts, so different tools that actually will leverage this. So Adam will actually do most of the talking, so I will hand it over to him.
Sounds good.
Take it away, man.
Well, thanks again, guys, for joining us in the last session of the day. Brave the last hour and 15 minutes. Gert already asked how many people have leveraged DAC packs previously. One other question I want to ask is how many people in here think database development and database lifecycle management is simple, straightforward, never provides any challenges? Good. That's what I like to hear. Otherwise, I wouldn't really have a job, I don't think. So why is this? You know, why do some of the things that we do on a daily basis in database development and database management seem sometimes like rocket science? Well, from a development perspective, different applications and different instances of the same application even often target different platforms or different versions of SQL Server. And doing database development, which inherently has some complexities, with this added complexity of multi-platform potential in mind, is often very challenging. On another development note, versioning your applications and keeping track of which database versions correspond to which versions of your application can be a very, very challenging task as well. Database development isn't often integrated with the same lifecycle management and development tools that our app tier development is. Database development's usually siloed off in the corner, not integrated in the same source code control tools, really a lack of consistency across database development. It's inevitable throughout a database lifetime that you need to promote your database across different environments. So whether that's dev, test, production. And one of the challenges there is maintaining not only schema integrity as you move through these different environments, but also application compatibility, making sure that all of the pieces in your app that correspond or correlate to your database function properly. If you think about your app tier for a second, it's really a lot easier to move your app tier around. It has a greater degree of portability. Compile your MSI or compile your source code, create your MSI, your application deployment package, and as long as you distribute those packages, run that MSI, and have your binaries on the client machine, your new instance of your application is really good to go. But from a database perspective, databases often have environment-specific or server-level dependencies that really make it difficult to just pick up that database and plop it down into a new environment. There's a lot of things that need to be wired up correctly that are often specific to the environment in which we started. Going to different keynotes this week and really walking around the expo hall, interacting with customers, there's really one thing that's clear to me, and that is that this notion of cloud computing, and more particularly hosted or cloud database environments, isn't going away anytime soon. This notion is here to stay. And developers are eager to adopt these new technologies and graft on to the new features that these platforms have to offer. But one of the things that we hear interacting with customers on a daily basis is, well, you know, I have my current way of doing things. I have a current system of database development. How do I get from where I am now to a place where I'm fully leveraging what these cloud platforms have to offer? And there really hasn't been a clear migration path forward in recent history. But to all of these challenges that you see up here, and there are many more that we're not even touching on around the database lifecycle, process, there is a solution. And I am here to tell you that that solution is data to your applications. So what is this silver bullet you're talking about, Adam? What is this notion of data to your applications, and how can it make my database development and lifecycle management easier? What data to your applications are all about, and I'll refer to them mainly as DAC, so you don't have to hear me say those same three words over and over again. DAC is really about a self-contained database representation that can be leveraged by an application. It's best described as a single unit of deployment and management and lifecycle management for your database. Everything that defines that database is contained inside the DAC. And all the problems that we saw in the previous slide are really about a lack of consistency, really stem from a lack of consistency across the different phases of the database lifecycle. And what Data to Your Applications, or DAC, is really trying to solve is providing a consistent story for these problems for database development, migration, and versioning across the SQL Server platform. Some of the beauty of the package-centric notion of Data to Your Applications is that these can be integrated into your normal application development and application lifecycle management tools. We'll see how you can develop DACs and author DACs right alongside your applications. There's no extra step that you really need to do in your application development to leverage DAC technology. You can extract a DAC pack from an existing database or develop a DAC pack from scratch, like we'll see in the author scenario. And on the round trip to deploy a DAC pack or a DAC package, we support deploying to not only SQL Server, but Windows Azure SQL databases. So this package-based representation is really a good path forward migrating not only within your on-prem environments, but between on-prem and the cloud as well. So what this picture does is not only give a good idea of some of the things that we're going to be talking about today, but really how the different client tools and the ecosystem of SQL Server 2012, with DAC as the center and the DAC packages as the center of these actions, really come together to provide a cohesive and comprehensive atmosphere for database development and management. So what we're going to start off with today, when we jump into some of our workflows, is start off with SQL Server data tools, the development environment, and look at how we can compile or author DAC packages. And once we have those packages, we can take advantage of some of these package-based actions and movements that are exposed by the DAC framework. So we can publish our package up into the cloud, publish it down into an on-prem instance. We can compare and sync database definitions between cloud databases, DAC packages, even database projects. From a management perspective, over in SSMS, we can take advantage of some of the management-focused tasks of the DAC atmosphere. We can create DAC packages by extracting or exporting from existing databases. We can register existing databases as data to your applications. And really take advantage of this entire DAC lifecycle that's all about taking your live database, bringing it down into this package format, migrating this package across your environments, doing your development work, and then publishing or pushing that database definition back up onto a server. So we've talked a little bit about the overall value of the data to your application lifecycle system, but I mentioned at the center of this system are these packages. So you're saying, okay, Adam, it's 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, you're talking about DAC packs and backpacks and this pack and that pack, so why do we need all these different formats? It's a good question. The reason that we have, and primarily two formats, DAC packs and backpacks, is that they're targeted at two different scenarios. So we'll start off with a DAC pack, and then we'll start off there in our workflows as well. DAC pack can best be thought of as a blueprint of your database, really a snapshot in time of the structure and the schema of your database application. You can walk up to a database, extract a DAC pack, and what we're going to do is reverse engineer a definition of that database, create a declarative in-memory model, and serialize that model down into the package. Now, notice I said a declarative model and put some stress on that, not an imperative model. And that's because DAC and DAC packages in general are all about storing the declarative definition of your database. It doesn't store information about how to go from one particular state of a database to some desired end state. It's all about a representation of what that desired end state is. And from a development perspective, that put the power in the hands of the developers to really work on defining what that state of the database they want it to be. In terms of creation of DAC packs, I said that you could compile or build a DAC pack alongside your applications in a database project, and you can also extract a DAC pack from an existing database. On the round trip, we support deploying DAC packs to SQL Server databases and SQL Azure databases, either in a new or incremental upgrade scenario. So the power of that is now you don't have to lug around a large sack of SQL scripts that you use to manage or deploy your databases. You can really have this one end definition of your database, and whether you're deploying for the first time or deploying in an incremental fashion to make schema modifications to your database, you can leverage this one artifact and the same actions. One other thing to point out about DAC packs is that you're not going to find, if you crack open the package, you're not going to find SQL. And the reason for that is we store the declarative definition of your database in an XML stream. So we don't have to carry around imperative alter scripts or SQL scripts. It's all stored in XML representation. And DAC packs also support the full realm of SQL Server database objects and data types. So you can really define your database with full fidelity and have a full fidelity representation of your database application. So you're saying, okay, Adam, that sounds great. I have this one package. It seems like I can support all my data types. I can support all my schema constructs. I can deploy it to a new or existing database. So why do I need another format? And the reason why we have the backpack format is it's really targeted at the Azure logical backup and restore scenario to migrate to a SQL Azure database. So not only, and there's a couple implications at the artifact level to support this scenario. So in a backpack, you're not only going to get the declarative definition of the database that you will in the DAC pack, but you're also going to get the data streams that correspond to that schema. So when you create a backpack, we're going to hydrate the same in-memory model, but also grab all of the data that corresponds to those tables. One other thing we need to make sure that on the restore scenario we have a faithful representation of your starting database is that we also need to store a couple stateful properties. So that when we go to the target environment, we know how to recreate the database in the exact state that was in when we started. A couple examples of those are whether your triggers or your constraints are enabled or disabled, and also whether your check constraints are with no check or untrusted, for example. One of the other distinctions between backpack and DAC pack that you'll see in some of the client tools as we go along is that the wording is different. The verbs are different. So for a backpack, the words that you'll see appear to create a backpack is export. So you can export from an existing SQL Server or SQL Azure database. And to deploy that backpack, you can import that to either a new or empty database. And the reason we don't support the incremental upgrade scenario for backpacks is that it's targeted at the logical backup and restore for Azure migration. So it really would be a non-starter if we had a database with objects in it already, because what the underlying engine wants to do is fundamentally tear down that database and hydrate it from scratch. The last difference between these two package formats is really the level of object support. So since we're targeted at this Azure migration scenario, the level of object support is targeted at Azure parity. So actually when you go ahead and export and create a backpack, we're going to go ahead and do some extra validation on the at export time to make sure your database representation is in a state that we can go ahead and round trip that back to Azure. So, like I said, these two packages are really at the core of what DAC is all about. Bringing your database down into this package representation, providing you a seamless and consistent way to move your database representation across environments and migrate to the cloud. So we've looked at what data tier applications are all about, the different packages that play into this ecosystem, but how does all of this happen? And how this happens is by leveraging what we call DACFX, or the DAC framework. And the DAC framework is really the runtime engine that sits underneath all of these packages and these actions and powers the different experiences that light up in the client. It's a redistributable component available with SQL Server 2012 that provides these database modeling, reverse engineering, and deployment capabilities that are leveraged by the different client tools. So there are a couple different levels of the stack at which you can interact with DACFX. First of all, at the lowest level, we expose a managed API that allows you to tap directly into the engine. This is a C# API, did a lot of work in this area for the 2012 release, And what you'll see in the API, and we'll get there in a little bit, and we'll actually do some coding in our demo, and you'll see verb-based methods that are really focused at the same actions that you saw on that DAC lifecycle slide. So there's really not much of a mental jump that needs to happen between understanding the scenarios of DAC and actually utilizing the API. If you don't want to jump down into the managed code layer, but you do want to take advantage of DACFX on a low level in a lightweight environment, you can leverage SQL package.exe, which is our command line tool that we provide with DACFX. It's really a very thin wrapper over the API, and you'll find a lot of the same functionality that you do in the API layer. And this is great for your automation environments, so scripting like PowerShell. My computer went to sleep over here. PowerShell and bash files. So really, those are some of the two low-level methods that you can use to interact with DACFX. So the packages I just talked about, DACPacks and Backpacks, are OPC files, or Open Package Convention. I'm not going to quiz you on that in 45 minutes, but really what they are is fancy zip files. You can actually rename the file extension and crack them open using your favorite WinZip utility. But one of the things that you get with DACFX is this DAC Unpack, which is a file handler that gets registered with the system that fundamentally understands how to comprehend and work with DACPacks. So what you can do is anytime you see a DACPack on your file system, you can go ahead and just double-click that guy, and DACFX is going to kick in, hydrate an in-memory model, and then serialize those same XML streams, lay it down onto disk for you. And we'll look at that here in a second as well. And again, at the very top of the stack, with SQL Server 2012, we've unified, and all of the client tools of SQL Server leverage this same DAC functionality. So SSDT, SQL Server Data Tools, SSMS, SQL Server Management Studio, SAMP is the Azure Management Portal. And also, if you saw some of the web publishing scenarios that Jason Zander was looking at in his keynote on Tuesday, some of those web and database publishing pipelines also leverage DAC functionality. So really anywhere that you'll see in SQL Server tooling that we need to move around or migrate a database, it's DACFX under the covers providing that functionality. So one of the last things I want to touch on before we jump into our demos, like Gert mentioned, is how we got here and the evolution of DAC. So some of you guys mentioned that you've leveraged DACPacks in previous iterations. What I want to get across is that this is not your grandfather's DACPack. We've made a lot of improvements, and part of that was by unifying the two underlying stacks, the two package formats that have been existing in the SQL Server ecosystem for quite some time. So if you look at the top path, really represents the developer artifact. So back in Database Edition of Visual Studio 2008, we introduced the DB schema file. And what this package was all about is really the design time scenario, focused on compiling, building your database definition. Robust deployment engine, full object support. And that was then bolstered with the release of database projects in Visual Studio 2010. Shortly in between that time, with the RC of SQL Server 2008 R2, we saw DACPack pop on the scene for the first time. And this was really about the management scenarios. Those management verbs exposed in SSMS had a smaller set of supported objects and didn't have as robust of a deployment engine. And it wasn't until SQL Server 2012 that we unified these two stacks and these two packages to DACFX v3. So what does that mean for you guys? Well, it means that there's only one package format that you need to worry about across all of SQL Server tooling. So one package artifact, regardless of which tool set you're in or working with, you can have the same functionality exposed and have the same sort of experiences. And just to touch on the support and compatibility again real quick, I mentioned that DACPacks support the full domain of SQL Server database objects and data types, and we support targeting not only SQL Server 2005, 2008, and 2012, but also Windows Azure SQL databases. And for those of you who have leveraged DACPack functionality in the past, no need to worry, because DACFX v3 is backwards compatible with all of those previous iterations of DACPacks. It, however, is not forward compatible, so if you're expecting to create a v3 package and go back to SSMS 2008 and leverage the package there, you're going to be out of luck. So you really need to stick with SSDT, SSMS 2012, and the Azure Management Portal. Okay, so enough slides for a second. Let's get into looking at some demos. And what we're going to take a look at in this first demo set is how to leverage DACFX on the low level by using SQL package.exe and the C# API. So let me go ahead and switch over my computer. Wake my mouse up. So the first thing that I want to show you is where all of the relevant components are installed when you have the DACFX redist. So you'll notice, let me zoom it up here. I'm in program files, x86 I'm on a 64-bit machine, 32-bit machine would be program files. And all of the DAC components are installed in SQL Server 110 and DAC. And you'll see all the assemblies. And here's my SQL package.exe. So I happen to have a handy command line shortcut. So let me go ahead and open this up, show you that I'm at the same place. So one of the first things that you can do, and for those of you who are at Sarah and Gert's SSDT session, we'll see a few of the same things here, but we'll dive into a little bit more of the detail behind these actions. So one of the first things that you can do when you walk up to SQL package is look what commands we have available. So if you scroll up to the top, you'll see these are all your top-level parameters that you can use in SQL package commands. But the first thing I want to show you, the most important parameter, is this action. And this specifies what action you want DACFX to do with your specific command. And the rest of these properties parameters are all about specifying your source and your target environments. So depending on what action you choose, there is different set of valid source and target parameters. So whether that's a database or a package, and we'll see that here in a second. So the first thing I want to do is look at how we can create a package using the extract verb. So I'm going to point it at an existing instance, a SQL Server 2012 database. So let's go ahead and get this command going. My action is going to be extract. My source server name is just my local box. And again, this is a SQL Server 2012 instance. Hit enter too early. My source database name, I'm going to be using the Dinner Now database. And then the last thing I need to provide is the target file. And this is the DAC pack that will end up in our directory after we've completed the extract action. So I'm going to send this to my demo folder, dinnernow.dacpack. So what we're doing here is we're connecting to what you've specified as the source environment. We're looking at that server. We're connecting to that database. And we're reverse engineering that database and creating an in-memory declarative model. And after we have that model, we'll resolve and make sure it's in a valid state and then serialize that model down into a DAC pack. So just to make sure I'm not lying to you and that this actually worked, we'll pop open to the same directory. And here's my DAC pack. So what I want to do now is show you the unpack functionality. So if I go ahead and double-click on this guy, see a simple dialog, and I'm going to go ahead and unpack. And this, again, is just going to lay down the constituent streams onto the file system. And you say, Adam, you lied to me. You said that there is no SQL stored in the package. Well, if I went back and renamed the package to .zip and cracked it open in its raw format, you wouldn't see that. It's only after DACFX kicks in with the unpack utility that we create an in-memory representation of that database and actually give you this declarative create script for your database. So if I go ahead and pop this open, what you're going to see is create definitions for all of the objects in that database. So notice there are no if exists or anything that takes into account the current state of the database. It's really just a declarative definition of all of the objects that were in that package. So what can I do with this? Well, one of the things we're going to look at a little bit later is how to hydrate a database project. And I can actually hydrate a database project from this exact SQL script. Okay, so now I'm going to go back to SQL package. And now that I have my DAC pack, what I want to do is go ahead and turn around and publish that DAC pack back to an instance. So to do that, I'm going to leverage the publish action. And I'm going to use the short form of the commands this time, so you don't have to watch me type anymore. I'm going to do a publish. And this time, my source file is going to be that DAC pack that I just created. And this time, my target environment is going to be the server. So my target server name is going to be the same instance I pulled from. And my target database name, I'm going to be creating a new database, and I'm going to call it Dinner Now Package. So let's go ahead and kick that off. So what we're doing under the covers is looking at that package, and from that package, hydrating an in-memory model. And then the first thing we're going to do, you see here, we create this database on the target instance because it doesn't exist. And then we go ahead and create all of those objects that were defined in my package. So here you're saying, okay, that's awesome. We've just created a new database. But what if I want to go? What if I want to turn around and run that exact same command again? What's going to happen? Is my entire database going to get torn down and rehydrated? Well, let's find out. So DACFX is actually smart about this. So it's going to do a model comparison. It's not only going to create a model of your source DAC pack, but it's going to reverse engineer and create a model of that target database. It's going to do a model comparison, and it's only the results and the differences of that model comparison that it will actually affect changes on the target environment. So in this case, I didn't change anything in my DAC pack, and I didn't edit anything on my database, so we didn't carry out any actions. One of the other things that you can do in the published pipeline is really tweak and adjust the characteristics of the deployment engine. So if we go ahead and get some published specific help, you can see all of these different parameters. Actually, I'll big font, so I'm going to run out of buffer space. I'll pop open a notepad. You can see by the length of the notepad that we have a wealth of options for you to tweak the deployment engine. So if I go down here, the things at the top are my standard source and target information. What's really interesting are these properties. So all these properties allow you to fine-tune the deployment engine for your scenario. So if you want to make sure that you are always recreating that database, if you want to start that database from scratch on every deployment, this is an option that you could use. Also, by default, and you'll notice as we go through some of these options, we're pretty conservative in our deployment strategy. What we won't do is delete any of the objects in your target database that aren't defined in your source package. If you want to override that and make sure that at the end of the deployment, everything that wasn't in your package has been dropped, you can use this drop objects not in source parameter. So let's go ahead and do a package. Actually, I'm going to go to SSMS. Open this Dinner Now database. Use the one that I just created. And I'm going to add a table really quickly just to show you what this command line option does. Table one, fantastic. Go back to SQL package. And this time I'm going to do the exact same command, but I'm going to specify drop objects not in source. Set that equal to true. So we're doing the exact same thing, but now what you'll see is that I'm going to go ahead and drop, you'll see the drop that table one. Because DACFX realized that it wasn't in my source package, and you told me that I wanted to make sure at the end that they were exact replicas of each other. So that's really a round-trip scenario in SQL package, the ability to create a DAC pack representation of your database, and then round-trip that database or that DAC pack back to a server with the ability to tweak that deployment engine. So what we want to do now, the best part of the demo, is do some coding. So what we're going to do is write a quick C# command line app that basically does the same thing using the DAC API that we did in SQL package. So what I'm going to do is create a new project. Oh, if I can use my mouse. Go up to a C# command line app. Dinner Now API. Don't need to add this guy to source control. Okay, so if I pop over here to Solution Explorer, there are a couple things that we need to do to set this up. So the first is we need to add a reference to the DLL that contains that assembly. And that's in the same exact program files location that I showed you earlier. And it's this Microsoft.SQLServer.DAC assembly. Let's go ahead and add that. Add a using statement so I can access the namespace. Okay, so one of the last things we need to do is come over here and change our target framework. So by default, we're on this client profile. DACFX uses a couple things that are not in the client profile, so we need to switch to the full .NET 4 framework. Yes, I know. Pop open program again. So the main class at the center of the API is the DAC services class. And what this does is it allows you to connect to an instance of SQL Server or Azure Database and really is your gateway to all of these package-based actions. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new services instance. And all I need to do to initialize this guy is pass in a connection string to the instance that I'm going to be working with. So I'm going to cheat. One of the worst things is watching a PM type code, so I'm going to go ahead and copy that connection string. And all we need to do now, if I dot through the services instance, you're going to see some very familiar wording. And like I said, the familiarity between the DAC concepts and the methods of the API, there's a very strong correlation. So you'll see some of the same words that you saw in that lifecycle slide. I'm going to start off with an extract action. Go ahead, and the first thing I need to do is pass the package file name. And this is akin to the target file that I used in SQL package. So I'm going to pass in dinnernowapi.dacpack. I need to specify the database that I'm connecting to on that instance. So I'm just going to use the dinnernow database that I extracted from before. And then the other two parameters that I need to specify here are pieces of metadata that get funneled down and stored into the resulting package. So pieces of DAC metadata that get leveraged by the instance when I register this as the data to your application. So I'm going to go ahead and call this the dinnernow package and add a new version. And I am, we're all good. So one of the things I want to do is add a few status messages so we know what's going on. I'm starting my extraction. And our operations are complete. OK, so let's just step back and take a look at that for a second. That's five lines of code. I'll move my mouse. That's five lines of code that we're going to use to point it at a database and create a full fidelity package representation of our database. And with that package, we can pass it off to developers so that they can use it in a database project. We can migrate that to other environments. But really, with a few simple lines of code, we can have this full fidelity package at our fingertips. So let's go ahead and run this guy. So we're starting our extraction. We're doing the exact same thing. We're reverse engineering our database and serializing that down into the package. Looks like everything went OK. I'm going to go over here to Solution Explorer, show all my files. Hop into the debug folder, and there we go, our dinnernowapi.dacpack. So you say, OK, that was great, but it was very black boxy. We didn't really have any status as to what was going on or the progress of the operation. So what we provide in the API is a set of events that you can use to track and surface some of these messages that are returned by the API. So I'm going to add an event handler to give us some of the same status messages we saw in SQL package. So I'm going to add the implementation, go up here, and declare my event handler. So you'll see we're handling these DAC message events and just outputting the message type, whether it's an error or a warning, the message number if it is an error, and the message. So let's go ahead and F5 this again. And what you'll see now is that all of the reverse engineering steps that DACFX is doing under the covers are surfaced through these message events. So now, you know, very similar actions or very similar summary that we had in SQL package. OK, so that's great. But what if we now want to turn around and deploy that package that we just created back to an instance like we did in the command line tool? So what I need to do is use one of the other classes available in the API, and that's a DAC package. So what this DAC package is a deserialized in-memory model representation of the schema that was in that package. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new pack, and using the load function, I'm going to pass in the DAC pack that we just created. So dinnernowapi.dacpack. So now that I have my DAC package, I'm going to go ahead and go back to my services instance. And you'll see that the verb to publish in the API is deploy. So I'm going to go ahead and call deploy. The first thing I need to pass in is my DAC package. So I'm going to pass in the pack. And then the target database name, or the resulting database name that I want on my instance. So I'm going to go ahead and call this dinnernow API. OK, so let's go ahead. And actually, I want to put in one more status message so we know that we're starting our deployment. OK, so let's go ahead and F5 this again. So you'll see the same thing in the extract portion. But when we start the deployment, you're going to see we're first creating the database and then hydrating it with all of the objects defined in the package. And this is fundamentally the exact same thing that happened in the command line tool. And that's really the goal, was to show you that we really tried to keep this as simple as possible so that even the non-SQL domain expert could leverage this API and some of these database packaging and transport mechanisms in their applications. One of the other things that I showed you in SQL package was the ability, let me close my Solution Explorer here and get some more real estate. One of the other things I showed you was how to modify that deployment pipeline. And we can do the same thing. If I go back to this deploy call, you'll notice that I have some other options here. One is to block the incremental upgrade scenario. I don't want to do that, so I'm going to put true for that guy. And then this DAC deploy options class. So that is the class that has a member for all of the published properties that we saw in the command line tool. So I have a snippet of this guy as well. And you'll see that we can specify some of the exact same things that we did in the command line tool and that are also surfaced in the different client tools that we'll see later. So if I start typing for this guy, you'll see that I have access to the exact same properties. And if I did another deployment, you'll see the exact same thing. I would drop that table if I had added the table there and then rehydrate with all the different objects. Okay, so that's what the API is all about. And like I said, really the two different ways that you can interact with DACFX on a very low level. But what I want to do now is switch back to the slides for a second and look at some of the different client tools that expose DAC functionality. So we know how we can interact with it in C#, from command line tool, some of our automation environments. But what if we want to leverage it higher up in the stack? So the first tool that we're going to look at today is SQL Server Data Tools. Again, this is really a database developer focused tool set in Visual Studio focused around the design time environment and building, compiling, and publishing DAC packs. Really the next iteration of the database project environment in Visual Studio 2010, we've added a lot of new features, but one other main difference is that this is free. For those of you who were in Gert's session yesterday, you saw the link, and you can go ahead and go try and download this right now and start leveraging this functionality. So in terms of some of the experiences that you'll see light up in SSDT, you have some connected development, and that's through the SQL Server Object Explorer, our new tool window in Visual Studio, and connected imperative and declarative development. So you have some of your query execution, some of the same familiar tools that you'll see in SSMS, familiar tree grid, Object Explorer. And that was intentional to provide SSMS folks migrating to SSDT a place to exercise some of that familiar memory muscle. We also have declarative online development, and DACFX allows you to work declaratively even against a live database. So if I want to work against objects in my production or live dev environments, I don't have to work in alter scripts. I don't have to worry about how to get my object from where it is now to the desired end state. DACFX provides me with a declarative snippet of particular objects and allows me to work in that environment as well. Really, the bread and butter of SSDT, though, is the database project system. Bringing your database down into source code, putting that into source code control, versioning your application, revving that database schema, doing your database development, and then whether that's through publishing or handing off a DAC pack or generating an incremental update script, pushing those changes back to your target environments. So some of the things that you'll see light up in terms of DAC pack actions in SSDT, and again, we're going to walk through a target scenario or a sample scenario here in a little bit. Build a DAC pack from your database project. A DAC pack is actually the build artifact of the actual project in the database project environment. You can also snapshot your database project and create a DAC pack, the point in time representation of your database project or what the underlying database model looks like. And that's a great way to version your application and keep track of which database versions correspond to your application versions. We can also we haven't talked about comparison much. This SSDT is the prime place where the comparison in terms of DAC packs as well as databases and database projects surfaces. So through SSDT schema comparison tool, which is really a visual head over the DACFX model differencing engine, you can compare and push updates to the different schema sources. And that's one of the other beauties of having this same common modeling format that can be hydrated from each of these schema sources is that regardless of what environment we're targeting and or what we're starting from, we can have the same sort of development or migration and change experiences. And at the end of that development cycle, what we can do is in step with the common Visual Studio paradigms, we can publish that database project out to a live SQL Server instance. So moving into the management scenario for a second in SSMS, SSMS is really a DBA-focused or database manager or administrator-focused tool set for developing, deploying, and managing your databases using DAC packages and DAC actions. So as you guys are well familiar, SSMS is your home for connected development. So you have your query execution plans, your familiar object explorer, some of the same experiences that you have in SSDT. And also what you'll see are various configuration sequences or tasks that help you, wizards that help you get complete a task from beginning to end. And this is a great place for some of these DAC actions to fit in. Because if you think about deploying your database, migrating your database to SQL Azure, registering your database, having an online version control story. These are some of these tasks that are more DBA focused, and we can provide nice configuration sequences to get you through these steps. In terms of DAC pack scenarios, what you'll see in SSMS, you can create a DAC pack, so extract from a live database. You can deploy either to a new database or upgrade for the incremental upgrade scenario. And one of the things we haven't touched on too much is this notion of registration. One of the things that you can take advantage of that is provided by the SQL Server engine for data to your applications is this notion of registration, which is really an online versioning story. So if you have an existing database and go ahead and register that as a data to your application, what the engine is going to do is grovel over your model and store a version of that schema in some of the system tables and metadata that it contains that are targeted for the DAC scenarios. So what that gives you is not only some application tracking and some application history information, but also a drift detection story. So what we'll see in our walkthrough, our scenario, is the ability that this gives us to protect ourselves from unwanted drift and unwanted deployments, unwanted drift during deployments when we're working in SSMS. One of the things that you'll see in SSMS that isn't surfaced in SSDT are some of your backpack scenarios. So since backpack is all about migrating your database to SQL Azure, this is really the home for that action. So you can create a backpack in SSMS by exporting a live database. You can import that backpack either to a new or empty database. And one of the things that you can also do for both of those tasks is leverage Windows Azure Blob Storage. So you can export or import to or from not only local storage, but your Azure storage accounts as well. And so that you don't have to be a middleman always using export then import to migrate your database to Azure, we've combined those two actions in this verb deploy database to SQL Azure. This is another thing you'll see show up on the context menu of a database node in SSMS. And what we're doing under the covers is DACFX is exporting the database into a local backpack and turning right around and streaming that backpack up and deploying it to a database in SQL Azure. So that's really your one-stop shop for this migration scenario moving from on-prem to the cloud. One of the last stops that we're going to make today is up in the cloud with the Azure Management Portal. We're doing a lot of work in this area. You'll see some new Silverlight UI come on board, a lot of the new changes to the portal released a couple weeks ago with the new Azure development features. But really what SQL Azure Management Portal, or SAMP, is all about is a subscriber or operator-oriented set of portal-based tools that allow you to manage your Azure databases using some of these same DACFX actions or same DACFX functionality. So it's an interesting mix of both the SSDT scenarios as well as SSMS. You have some connected online imperative and declarative development. You'll see some design time support, and we'll look at that as well. And what you also see are the same actions light up in terms of DAC packs. So you can extract a DAC pack, you can deploy a DAC pack or upgrade, all to live SQL Azure databases. What's sitting underneath all of the pretty Silverlight UI that you see is a set of web management service endpoints, a set of service endpoints that fundamentally understand DAC and support all of those different actions that are surfaced across the portal. And one of these management endpoints is the SQL Azure Import-Export service. And you'll see this surfaced up one level in the main Azure developer portal. What the import-export service is a set of endpoints that allows you to programmatically tap into server-side DACFX for import and export. So all the things that we've talked about so far, SQL package, the API, SSDT, and SSMS, all run DACFX on the client side. So all of the actions that DACFX is doing is being done on your local box, and the resulting operations are then submitted to the instance. But for the import-export service, we're actually running DACFX in an Azure web service. So what you do, you can programmatically tie into the endpoints or access it through the UI, which we'll see, and stream your backpack to this service and have the DACFX work on the client side to either create a backpack or server side to create a backpack or create a database from an existing backpack. And if you think about this for a second, it has some really interesting app integration scenarios. One possible example is you're developing an application and you want to deploy a new SQL Azure database with every deployment or every new installation of your application. will simply tap into the import-export service in your installation code or your deployment code, and you can leverage a backpack that is in existing blob storage and create that new database. One of the other possible scenarios you can think about is if you're running an Azure service, for example, and you have a lot of peak times, so your user demand, your user activity peaks and then troughs. What you can think about doing is when you're handling user activity, you can stream that database down into blob storage and rehydrate that when the client becomes active again. That can help the client from surfacing unwanted or unnecessary charges and really provide some better performance for some of the other users of your app. And those are just a couple of examples. And we're working on reconciling the import-export service with not only the proper SQL Azure Management Portal environment, but also the underlying V3 stack. So we actually did a deployment this week, and some of the V3 service updates were pushed live to the import-export service. So this is an ongoing area of investment, and you'll see some of the new features and functionality light up in these portal-based tools. Okay, so that's kind of a quick run-through of some of the client tools of SQL Server 2012 and how they tie in to DACFX functionality. This is a little bit different version of the lifecycle slide I showed you earlier, but really driving home the notion of how DAC and the DAC lifecycle supports a cohesive and comprehensive database lifecycle management ecosystem. So we'll start off in the developer scenario with SSDT, all about managing your database from source, building and creating those DAC packs, comparing not only DAC packs, but other databases, database projects. From a DBA perspective in SSMS, we can then deploy those packages or upgrade existing instances. And then using SSMS in the Azure Management Portal, we can go ahead and extract or export DAC packages, register our databases as DAC, and do some online development as well. And then the endless cycle never ceases that we need to make schema changes or need to update our application, update our database in sync with the new version of our app. And we start the cycle over again. We go back to the developer tools and move forward throughout the cycle. So what we're going to do now is shift back over to some of our demos. And I'm going to walk through a scenario that touches all of these client tools of SQL Server 2012. So we're going to start off in SSDT, move to SSMS, and then jump up into the cloud with the Azure Management Portal. So let me switch over to my box here. So the first thing that we're going to do in the scenario that we're going to play out is, so I'm a database developer. Gert is my DBA. Of course he doesn't trust me. Thinks I'm some wild database developer, sits across the office, always acting crazy, not quite sure what I do on a daily basis. But what I'm going to do is he wants me to make some schema changes to make our database Azure compliant, because we're going to migrate our database to SQL Azure, as well as make sure that our database definition is up to par with our business standards in terms of coding rules. So I'm going to start by creating a database project. And now you're saying, Adam, so you're going to do some database development, but you don't have access as the developer to the live production environment. Well, never fear. We have a solution for that. And the solution is that we already have a pre-existing DAC pack that Gert has extracted for me, and I can hydrate my database project. So I'm going to start by creating a new project. And you'll notice right off the bat one of the simplifications we made in the SSDT environment, and that's we only have one project type. So for those of you who have leveraged the existing database projects in Visual Studio 2010, you'll know that we had one project type for each target version. We had CLR projects, data to your application projects. Now we're standardized on one database project, but all of that functionality can be reached within this project. So I'm going to go ahead and add this to source control. Don't need to save changes. And one of the other things that I mentioned at the beginning that is great about having this database project environment right in Visual Studio is that I can integrate it with some of the application lifecycle management tools that I normally do with my app. So to hydrate this project, I want to go ahead and import this DAC pack. So you'll go ahead and see that to import, I can either point it at a live database, reverse engineer that database, and create my project from that definition. I can take a declarative script, like the one that we saw in the DAC pack of model.sql. I can import that script, and we'll create the same model and shred that script, feed that into object-based scripts in the project. But what I'm going to do is import from this DAC pack that Gert's already created for me. So I'm going to go ahead, and this is the handoff DAC pack. I'm going to import the permissions and all the database settings so that I know I have a faithful representation of my database in my project. So we're deserializing that model, creating the in-memory model that represents our package, and shredding that model down into object-level scripts. So I'll pop over here into Solution Explorer, and if you see, navigate through my project, there's all my tables, my sprocs, everything looks good to go. But the first thing I want to do is baseline this application, because I'm not fault tolerant. I do make mistakes, so I want to make sure that I'm in a state that I can revert back to. And traditionally, this is something that is hard to do. Like I said, we have to lug around SQL scripts that correspond to a specific version of my database. But in the SSDT database project, this is something that we take care of for you. So you can go ahead up to the project node and use this snapshot feature. So what this is doing, if I expand this a little bit, it's actually creating a standalone DAC pack that is a representation of the model sitting behind my project. So that's one other thing to point out is that at all times when you're working in a database project, there's always the same schema model, in-memory schema model, sitting behind your files. So it's not just a set of SQL scripts, there's a live model behind there. So what we've done is, actually I should have just done that right there. I'm going to make my dinner now baseline. And now since I have my database representation in a project, I've created my baseline, I want to go ahead and submit this to source control. So I'm going to go ahead and check this in. So in just a couple short clicks, what we've done without even having access to the production database is brought a representation of this database into our project and added this to source code control with a baseline version. So think about the power of that for a second, and the ability to have an isolated sandboxed environment that I can have a full representation of my database and work against a live model. So what I want to do now, Gert told me that we're going to migrate this database to Azure. So if you see this notion of the target platform, right now it's set to 2012, but I'm going to switch it over to Azure. So what does this do? In real time, DACFX is actually constantly validating the model that is sitting behind my database project. And it's giving target-specific validation based on this target platform that I've selected here. So just by switching it to Azure, I'm now getting real-time validation against the requirements, the limitations, and the supported constructs for the Azure environment. So now that I've switched that, let's go ahead and do a project build and see what kind of state we're in. Okay, it looks like we're not too bad. We only have one object that isn't supported, and of course a sequence isn't supported in SQL Azure. So let's go find this guy in my project. And this was just some artifact left over by another colleague developer that was trying out this new functionality, but I don't need it anymore, so I can go ahead and delete this guy. Delete this folder, clean this up a bit. So I'm going to go ahead and do a build again, make sure we're in a good state. Yeah, sir. So there is no difference. It's the exact same representation. If I were to crack that open, I'd see the contents of those XML streams are the same. But what this allows me to do is put it into my project. So if I put this into source control, I have that baseline version there. But inherently, in the DAC pack, there is no fundamental difference in the representation. Okay, so I've changed my target platform to Azure. I have taken care of some of the Azure-specific errors that we saw. Now, Gert's told me about some of these coding errors that he's seen or some of the places in our T-SQL code that aren't up to business standards. So one of the things I can do is go up here to the project and run code analysis. So what this allows DACFX to do is go over our model according to a preset list of rules that we have in the database project and validate our model against certain naming conventions, performance conventions, or design conventions. And these must be what he was talking about. So looks like we have three warnings, a couple of them around this stored procedure. So let's go ahead and open this guy up. One of the big improvements that we've made in SSDT is bringing T-SQL development in Visual Studio up to first class, up to parity in terms of features and supported constructs with some of your other project environments that you're used to, like C# and VB. And adding T-SQL language services was how we got there. So you'll see some of the things like find all references or go to definition, some of the things that you're very much used to in some of your code development. One of the things that I also have access to is refactor rename. So I need to change this stored procedure name and get rid of that SP prefix. So I can go ahead and change this proc name, get rid of this. And really, this is a data access layer procedure that allows me to insert a new menu item into my database. So I'm going to go ahead and preview the changes. And this will show me all of the places that this stored procedure is referenced. Now, this isn't just a simple find and replace like you find in Microsoft Word. Like I said, DACFX is smart about these kinds of things. It understands in your model the difference between anywhere where this text is and a place where it's semantically relevant. So DACFX is going to go through my model and look at anywhere where this stored procedure is referenced. And it's going to go ahead and only there change this name. So I only have one reference here, so I'm going to go ahead and apply that change. One of the other things that it was telling me about is a type difference between the data type of the column in my table and the parameter data type. So I'm going to go ahead and change this out to varchar128. So let's go ahead and run code analysis again and see where we are, see if we've made some progress. OK, so it looks like we've gotten rid of every problem in the proc. Now we're going to jump over to this view. So one of the things that it pointed out is that because I'm using select star, if the underlying shape of this table changes, the performance or the shape of this view might change as well. So what I want to do is refactor and expand this wildcard, but break it out into the different column, the full column definition of the table. So let me run code analysis one last time, make sure we're in a clean state. Looks like we're good to go. So what I can do now is snapshot this project again and store this V2 baseline that I've adapted some of my changes, removed the sequence so we're Azure compliant, and made the changes based on code analysis as well. So let's go ahead and snapshot. Call this V2. And you'll notice I have this other file down here, the refactor log. So when I did these refactoring operations, especially that refactor rename, DACFX is also smart in this area. So it added an entry to this refactor log. So when I go ahead and deploy this out to my target database, it's not going to just drop and recreate that object. It'll actually issue an SP rename, so it renames that procedure from its original name to the new name. So go ahead, and that's another XML file that is carried out through the deployment. So one of the other things that we did in SSDT is really bring up this notion into database development that you're used to in some of your other development environments of this rapid development and debug loop. So when I was making that command line tool, I didn't go whole hog, make that entire thing, and only worry at runtime, look at runtime what the problems were. No, I added a little bit of functionality, I ran it, I saw what the output was, added a couple more pieces of code, I added my deploy, and I kept doing this in a rapid cycle. And this is something that hasn't really been available in the database environment until SSDT. So we achieved this by integrating with LocalDB. So if I pop over here to SQL Server Object Explorer, which is, again, the SSDT home for database development in VS, you'll see that I have this LocalDB instance. And this LocalDB instance is a lightweight on-demand instance of SQL Server 2012 that spins up and down on demand according to my database project. So you'll see that if I expand this instance, I'll have one database, and it corresponds to my database project. So what I want to do now is to make sure that I can actually deploy to Azure. It looks like we're good in the project, but I want to make sure that there's nothing wrong with the deployment pipeline or any of the constructs in my model. So what I can do is I can just do a simple F5, the same thing that we did back working with the command line tool. So I'm going to go ahead and F5 this guy. And if I go down to the output window, you'll see that not only am I doing a build, but I'm also deploying out to LocalDB. So you'll see some of the exact same things that we saw in our production deployment. I'm creating all the different objects. So if I go over to the Dinner Now database and look at my tables, looks like everything's there. Make sure our stored procedure has the new name. Looks awesome. So we've carried our refactoring through. And if you think about LocalDB in the context of SQL Azure, instead of doing database or Azure database development against the cloud and having to constantly deploy out to your cloud environment, only to find out at runtime that you have deployment problems, LocalDB and Azure integration in Azure Debug Database really provides a full fidelity local Azure sandbox. So as I'm working in my database project, I don't have to constantly publish out to Azure. I can do my offline Azure development using this local DB debug loop. So it looks like we're good to deploy to Azure. But again, I don't have access to the Azure environment. So what can I do? How can I get these changes out there? Well, what I can do is just use the build artifact of the database project as a DAC pack and pass that back over to GERT to deploy that from SSMS. So let's go ahead and do one final build. And you'll see if I show all files in the debug folder, you'll see the DAC pack. Again, that's because a DAC pack is the fundamental build artifact of a database project. So let's switch gears. Now that I've done all the database development tasks, let's switch over into SSMS so we can deploy this application to Azure. So get rid of this table. Okay, so I now have my GERT hat back on. I'm DBA. Well, Adam's been doing his crazy development work off in the corner. I'm not confident that he hasn't introduced Drift to the database. So what I want to do is, before I apply his changes, I want to register this database to protect me. So I'm going to go ahead and register this as a data tier application. And again, what this is going to do is look at that the model of my database schema and store a version of that schema down into the system tables as metadata for my data tier application. So what I'll get when I go along to upgrade this database, which I'll do now, I'll get some drift detection to make sure that I've protected myself against unwanted drift that has occurred in the database since I last registered it. So go ahead and upgrade data to your application. And I'm just going to point to the build artifact of the project that I just created. So there's my DAC pack. So the first thing that's going to do is it's going to look at that database that I've just registered and look at the current state and see if there's been any drift. Okay, this Adam guy, he's not so bad after all. He hasn't snuck in any rogue changes. Looks like our database is in a consistent state. What I'm going to do now is actually look at the upgrade plan. So under the covers, DACFX is doing a model comparison with that source DAC pack and the target database model. So it looks like everything that I expect. I've renamed this procedure. I have made the change to the view and also the data type of that procedure. So let's go ahead and deploy these changes. So again, we're doing the same incremental deployment. We're not starting from scratch. We're not blowing our database up and rehydrating all of the objects. We're only affecting those changes that we needed to make to carry those changes over from the development environment. So let's finish that. And let's see if the changes were appropriately made. Go down and look at my stored proc. Okay, looks like our refactor log did its job. We've renamed that SP procedure to insert menu item. So now I mentioned we want to deploy this to the cloud. So, you know, how are we going to go about doing that? Do we have to get a create script for our database and go up into the portal or SSMS and execute this create script? In fact, we don't. What we can do is we can leverage this deploy to SQL Azure task that I mentioned earlier. So again, this is doing an export to a local backpack and then turning right around and deploying that backpack up to SQL Azure. So I'm going to type in my Azure credentials here. And hopefully the Azure connection gods are on my side today. I'm going to call it Dinner Now database. I can select my edition and the size of my database. Let's go ahead and kick this off. So what this is going to do, it's going to validate my schema against Azure. It's going to create a backpack and do the same sort of deployment that you would have seen if I were to just deploy this database to SQL Azure using the import task. So again, it's looking at that deployment plan, comparing against the existing Azure database, which there isn't one, and then it'll go ahead and populate all of those tables and put in the data that corresponds with those tables as well. So while that's churning along, I want to show you the other way that we could have done this. So here I'm in the Azure Management portal, and this is your main developer portal, not the database specific. So if I come over here to the import-export pane, you'll see this import. And this is, again, import a backpack from Windows Azure Storage. So the other way that I could have done this migration is from SSMS, exported my backpack to Windows Azure Blob Storage, and then come up here and use the import-export service to then hydrate my Azure database from that backpack. So I'll go ahead and fill this out and show you what this is going to look like. And again, in the background, that SSMS task is still going on. So I'm going to create Dinner Now. And the two things that you need to specify are the location of the backpack in your Windows Azure storage. So I'm cheating again, and I have my blob URL here. And one thing to note is that you have to specify the container. So you need to have already made a container and stored your backpack in that container. So I'm going to also put in my access key. I hope nobody has photographic memory, because you will then be able to hijack my storage account. And if I went ahead and click Finish, this would go ahead and do the exact same thing and hydrate an Azure database from this backpack. So let me go back to SSMS, and it looks like everything completed. Again, we processed all the tables, created the tables, and put the data up there. What I want to do now is verify that. So let me jump over here to the Azure Management Portal, or SQL Azure Management Portal. I'm going to pop into this new Silverlight UI, and one of the things I'll have to do first is log into that server. And this is very much like just logging in using your connection credentials like you would for any instance in SSMS. So let me go ahead and log in here. And again, you'll see a lot changes coming down the pike in these portals as we work to incorporate new, not only DAC features, but other Azure features in general. So you'll see us drive to consistency across these different portals. So we have a nice tile environment here. Everything is better in Metro. Let me go ahead in the Databases tab. Looks like my Dinner Now database made it up here. If I go to my Design view, I can look at my tables, my views, and my procs. For the tables, it looks like all of my tables are here, and the data. Let's go ahead and see what that data looks like. Oh, we're on the menu. What do we have? Turkey salad, sweet caramel, chocolate cake. Well, perhaps some of these things will be available to you guys after we finish the session. Okay, so it looks like our data made it up there. Okay. What we want to do now, Gert forgot to tell me that we needed to add one more procedure. So for our data access layer, we wanted to add one more procedure to isolate the addition of a customer. So we're going to go back over here to our design tab, go to stored procs. You see we have our insert menu item there, but what we're going to do is add an insert customer procedure. And I'm going to cheat again and copy the definition of the procedure from my notepad, add my parameter, and go ahead and save that off. And this is executing that query against my live Azure database. So you say, okay, we did all this work to version our application, baseline our application, add it to source code control in the database project, but in the production Azure environment, we just went ahead and made another change. So how can I get this back to my database project? Well, if I go back to the administration tab, you'll see the exact same DAC verbs that we saw in some of the other client tools, including SSMS. So I can go ahead and deploy a new DAC. I can upgrade, incremental upgrade a database data to your application. And in this case, I can go ahead and extract a DAC pack that has that new procedure definition in it. So let's go ahead and description new procedure. And save this, and I'll just save this off to my desktop. And again, this is DACFX running up in Azure, and we're just doing the exact same thing, reverse engineering that database and streaming it down onto a local package. So what I could do now is jump back into SSDT, do a schema comparison, a surgical update to bring that procedure back into my project, and do another baseline. But since we're running out of time, I want to jump back to the slides for a few minutes and leave some time for some questions. So if I hop back over to the slide machine, so I know this is a bit of an eye chart, but it really summarizes what we talked about today, the different packages, how DAC is really the center of all of the different SQL Server client tools in 2012. So you'll see DAC packs and backpacks, the three main customer-facing elements that surface this DAC technology, the development environment of data tools, SQL Server data tools, the different verbs, and we didn't hit every one of these lines today, but we hit some of the high points as we went through our workflows and really understand how we could integrate data to your applications and DAC functionality into our database lifecycle management and how some of these arrows and some of these packages can really make our lives easier. So just to kind of circle back around in summary, you know, some of the challenges that we started off talking about, how to version our application, develop databases for different target platforms and some of the challenges that that brings, migrating our database between on-prem environments and migrating up to Azure. And really, data to your applications or DAC and DACFX solves a lot of these problems. By presenting as a single unit of deployment and management a database package that contains the full definition of your database schema. Not only can we deploy these packages to on-prem SQL Server, but we can use them to migrate to Azure and version our applications as well. And again, the different clients that surface DACFX, not only SSDT, SSMS, the Azure Management Portal, and also some of the Visual Studio web and database publishing pipelines as well. So that kind of wraps it up. Here's some of the resources. You can get data tier or the DAC framework MSI, which has all of this functionality and the other dependencies from the 2012 feature pack. You can get SSDT. I mentioned it's free online for anyone that has SQL Server 2005 and up license. You see our team blog there and our forum. We're always active on the forum answering questions not only about SSDT, but DACFX in general. Because DACFX really is a fundamental part of not only SSDT, but some of those other SQL Server 2012 client tools. So these are some of the other slides. Some of you went to Gert's session, but his session will also be available online in Channel 9, as well as my session. So if you want to go back, look at some of those flows and look at some of the other places that you could integrate DAC into your database management lifecycle. The hands-on lab was available downstairs, and the TLC won't be open after the session, but the TLC is up here on stage. Gert and I can be a virtual TLC and answer some of your questions. So thanks again, guys, for sticking around for the last session of the conference. I hope you guys had a great tech ed, and hope you realize that DACFX v3 is not your grandfather's DAC and can really provide some value in your database management lifecycle. So with that, thank you, guys. Anybody have any questions? And I have nowhere to go, so I can stay here as long as you guys want. Yeah, so the question was, what are some of the fundamental differences between backpacks and DACPacks? And really at a package artifact level, the main difference is that you do have the table data and some of those stateful properties. So to really enable that logical backup and restore scenario, we have to store some of those things that are stateful in nature to make an accurate representation in the source environment, or the target environment, sorry. No, actually, that's a great point. So the question was, what is the data deployment like? So it's not incremental yet. We're working on some of these features, making a robust data deployment engine. But what it does now is rip and replace. So, and that's why, again, it's targeted at the new or empty database scenario because, yeah, restore, yeah. So it just rips and replaces that data and hydrates it from what's ever defined in your package. Yeah, so the user data, all of the rows of that, I popped up the menu item, you saw all the different line items, so it hydrates not only reference data scenario, but also user data as well. You got another question? Yep. So the question was, does the refactor log record the exact segments? Do you mean the exact portions of the code that were replaced? Oh. To start off, the question was, how does DAC handle changing columns? Do we do a drop and recreate, rebuild the table? So there's a couple different scenarios. If the only change is a column and you've added it at the end of the table definition, we'll go ahead and add that column right onto the end. But since we're pretty conservative in terms of overwriting your data, we'll actually block some of the operations, the destructive operations that would result in loss of data. But inherently, if you add a column that is in the middle of that table definition, we will take care of data movement, and we will do a drop and recreate and move that data from place to place.
So the main thing is, like, SQL only has 5 commands, right? You can create a table, you can drop a table, you can add a column, but only to the end. And you can alter it, a data type, but only if there's an implicit conversion available. So as long as the developer changes our constraint was in that framework, we will do alters. If you're trying to enforce column ordering, which a lot of people seem to have a desire to, which has no actual meaning inside SQL Server to begin with, but apparently people think that's interesting, and you ask us to enforce this columning ordering, it's like you will get a create drop replace, where we have to copy the data. Right? It's like we cannot solve the problem of the limitation in SQL Server statements available to do conversions.
Yeah, and if we pop open one of those.
But it's like we're trying to so if you have a bunch of changes, what we'll do is those will feed into the deployment pipeline. We will consolidate all those changes and say, like, these are all the changes that you want to make on this table. Are there options available to actually do this efficiently? We will also try to batch them if possible. Or if they're efficiently done by separating them out, we will separate them out. So that there's an optimization stage in the deployment pipeline which we'll go through. Now, if one of them will trigger a more expensive operation, we'll do all those in one expensive operation and try to do it only once.
Sir.
How does the DAC handle link server?
Link server. So we fundamentally understand the link server definition, so you can store that definition in the DAC pack. But again, the target scenario is the database-centric.
So a DAC pack on itself represents a single container. Right. Now, it's like from a deployment point of view, you can deploy multiple packages, and we have references between packages to be able to resolve namespaces. Right. So if you have a reference to a 3 or 4 part name, actually those by SQL Server definitions are deferred name resolves to begin with. Right. So it's like we don't have to actually make those checks to begin with. We do actually note inside the package that there are references, so we can go out and actually validate that they are accessible, but we only do that in 3-part names, not in 4-part names. Because a 4-part name is never resolved by SQL Server to begin with. And so there is only so much checking we can do at deployment time with regards to link server availability. At design time, we do, however, allow you to model this inside SSDT. So at design time, you are able to completely represent 3-4-part names or even packages that contribute to the same namespace, so you can create composite projects.
So if you have an existing DDL trigger in the database?
So the question is, like, if you have a DDL trigger, will that fire? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Actually, we have a flag that allows you to say, is like, if you want to turn those off at deployment or not. Because it's like, it might make actually that we can deploy. Right? So at that point in time, we turn it off before we start deployment, do it, and then go from there. Because it's like, there are DDL triggers. You can write a rollback and a DDL trigger. Right? But that depends on your environment. So that's why there are deployment options.
Yeah, so the...
Cool. Go ahead. A lot of good parties
I say what you're doing.
I'll take it. So that's one of the prime examples, right? It's like the prime example is you have a single file artifact, as Adam described, and to be able to deploy that many times. So the only thing you need to achieve this is actually the DAC runtime. Everything they Adam showed from the command line and the API is built on top of the engine. The engine can be distributed in two forms. You can officially acquire it through the MSI, which places it in the location that Adam showed. Now, it's like you can also, it's like it's xcopy deployable. So what that allows you to do is, for example, create a custom task that you embed in your installer technology, and then from your MSI, you actually call the installer and deploy the database as part of the installer task. We actually have MVPs that are already doing this today. It's like we don't have a formal custom task that you can actually use inside an MSI, but it's technically possible to do this.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it's available as a redistributable component, so you can package it in your MSI and your installer technology as well.
The other use case for actually if you're talking about ISV scenarios is like, at least I've been in the field like before I actually moved to Redmond, is like many cases you have customers that claim not to have changed their database. Right, that's always an interesting debate from a support department point of view. Now you can basically tell them, it's like, here you have SQL package. Why don't you drop your database definition into the SQL package? Send me the SQL package. And you can take your definition that came out of your development team, compare it with the customer has, and see exactly where his differences are. All right, so it's a very easy and cheap way of actually diffing what the customer has and what you have. Or it was like what other team members do. It's like there's a truckload of scenarios like that where you can leverage this. And simply say, it's like, oh, now it's like figuring out or comparing two sets of files. This is also the scenario where it's like about the snapshots. Right? The ability, why do we make snapshots? Well, we allow you to make those snapshots because then you can start to compare them in time. And you can sort of see them as shelf sets, which you can use to a USB scenario. Right? The other reason why is like we want to deploy, enable you to deploy through a command line set of tools is because in a lot of times it's like you need to pass a firewall. Right? You probably don't have access from your Visual Studio environment, hopefully, to your production environment. And you might actually have to pass the DMZ or be inside the DMZ to actually be able to deploy this. And this is what the command line tool actually enables you. A lot of people actually don't know if you install SQL Server 2012 proper, this command line tool is installed by default. So the SQL package is always there as part of your SQL installation. So you can use it as a deployment mechanism into your server environment.
Yeah, that's one thing I forgot to point out when I was talking about, you know, where the files get dropped. Regardless of your installation, anytime you deploy SQL Server or install SQL Server, whether it's just SSMS or the full engine, you do get the entire DAC framework. So all of that functionality, SQL package, is all there. Go ahead. Get those on deployment? Yeah, so one of the things that I didn't touch on in the project system was the notion of pre- and post-deployment scripts. So the way that you can manage reference data in the database project environment today, and Sarah can add anything if she wants to about where we're going from data perspective, but you can add those insert statements from your reference data into the post-deployment script, and after you do the deployment, it will, you know, insert that data into those tables. Yeah.
So the thing is like, so I'll answer it for you guys. So pre- and post-deployment script is the state today. It's messy because your script has to be idempotent, right? So in other words, it's like it runs with every deployment, so it's like it better be able to detect with collisions, et cetera. So what we're doing is like what you saw is like Adam described with backpacks where we take the data stream and make them part of the package. Sarah is actually working on an improvement right now to add data support right into the package. And so it's like you will be able to take your reference data scenario and actually move that as a first class entity into your environment. What this will allow us to do is also do an incremental deployment, because as soon as you have reference data and you're in a foreign key situation, you can of course not allow to do a rip replace. It's like you need to be able to do a interesting incremental deployment. For example, this will also allow you to give you options, for example, like, well, only insert new ones, or only insert and update, but never delete in case you have reference tables where customers or the application itself might at runtime add reference or values in there. That's something that we're working on that will hopefully make it out to you before the end of this year. So that's something that's on the, in the pipeline. In the back, sorry, we'll come back from.
Is it possible to change the schema in the API in the DAC bank? So instead of telling it to go
So the question was, via the API, the existing DAC API, can you modify the contents of that package? And the answer right now is no. The API is limited to the package creation and movement scenarios. But that's also another area of improvement that we're working on is extending that API and trying to target some of those modification scenarios. So something going on down the road, you'll see that API begin to grow and open up those scenarios as well. Thanks.
Thank you. There was some more questions up front.
Yep.
So the question is about like, and you're paying really well attention.
If you look
at the debug output file, it's like there actually is a DLL and a PDB file. So the thing is that it's like per SQL Server Data Tools, the projects, we actually are a hybrid project system, whereas like we also allow you to create SQL CLR objects in the same from the same project. And so it's set up by default to actually generate a DLL, but that's actually right now is an empty DLL. But the build sequence actually does produce those. It's like I think we can explicitly turn that off, but.
Yeah, you can turn off altering the assembly, but if I were to have a CLR object, what you'd see is that DLL be created, and then in the deployment script, you'd see an alter assembly and deploy those CLR objects using that assembly.
Nope. A single transport format. So the whole goal about the OPC format is that there is one thing that you have to lug around. So once it's built, that whole thing should be everything that you need. Sure. Merged replication. So with merged replication, it's like, so one of the aspects there is, so the question is like if I have merged replications, any specific scenarios or things to consider, and the answer is yes. Because it's like your DDL changes are basically any DDL change on an object that is merged replicated, invalidates the replication. All right, so it's like right now it's like what we actually do because of that is like we have a do no harm policy that we basically say is like you're trying to change something that is still under replication. The same is true for change data tracking
CDC
change data capture. Excuse me. We basically detect that you're trying to make a change and fail fast the deployment at the beginning. Because like you would have to turn that off beforehand because you have to rehydrate your CDC session or your merge replication session. So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you guys.
Thank you very much.